Chapter 64. Which stands alone in the history of man, perhaps. Coded identified other relics. This hat belonged to August Terras. He carried the cage of pigeons which we proposed to set free upon the summit. Here is the wing of one of those pigeons. And here is the fragment of my broken baton. It was by grace of that baton that my life was saved. Who could have told me that I should one day have the satisfaction to look again upon this bit of wood that supported me above the grave that swallowed up my unfortunate companions? No portions of the body of Terras, other than a piece of the skull, had been found. A diligent search was made, but without result. However, another search was instituted a year later, and this had better success. Many fragments of clothing which had belonged to the lost guides were discovered. Also, part of a lantern, and a green veil with bloodstains on it. But the interesting feature was this. One of the searchers came suddenly upon a sleeved arm projecting from a crevice in the ice wall, with the hand outstretched, as if offering greeting. The nails of this white hand were still rosy, and the pose of the extended finger seemed to express an eloquent welcome to the long-lost light of day. The hand and arm were alone. There was no trunk. After being removed from the ice, the flesh tints quickly faded out, and the rosy nails took on the alabaster hue of death. This was the third right hand found. Therefore, all three of the lost men were accounted for, beyond cavil or question. Dr. Hamel was the Russian gentleman of the party which made the ascent at the time of the famous disaster. He left Chamonix as soon as he conveniently could after the descent, and as he had shown a chilly indifference about the calamity, and offered neither sympathy nor assistance to the widows and orphans, he carried with him the cordial execrations of the whole community. 4 months before the first remains were found, a Chamonix guide named Balmat, a relative of one of the lost men, was in London, and one day encountered a hale old gentleman in the British Museum, who said, "I overheard your name. Are you from Chamonix, Monsieur Balmat?"
"Yes, sir."
"Haven't they found the bodies of my three guides yet?"
"I am Dr. Hamel."
"Alas, no, Monsieur."
"Well, you'll find them, sooner or later."
"Yes, it is the opinion of Dr. Forbes and Mr. Tyndall that the glacier will sooner or later restore to us the remains of the unfortunate victims."
"Without a doubt, without a doubt. And it will be a great thing for Chamonix, in the matter of attracting tourists. You can get up a museum with those remains that will draw." This savage idea has not improved the odor of Dr. Hamel's name in Chamonix by any means. But after all, the man was sound on human nature. His idea was conveyed to the public officials of Chamonix, and they gravely discussed it around the official council table. They were only prevented from carrying it into execution by the determined opposition of the friends and descendants of the lost guides, who insisted on giving the remains Christian burial, and succeeded in their purpose. A close watch had to be kept upon all the poor remnants and fragments, to prevent embezzlement. A few accessory odds and ends were sold. Rags and scraps of the coarse clothing were parted with at the rate equal to about $20 a yard. A piece of a lantern and one or two other trifles brought nearly their weight in gold, and an Englishman offered £1 for a single breeches button. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.